Hey y'all, welcome to Tomes of Terror, my little humble book review show. Going for the big dogs this time. This is actually the first time, even though I've read most of Stephen King's shit over, well, I don't know if I'd say most, but a large portion of his books I've read over the years. But I haven't read, like, my reading of his newer stuff has been kind of sporadic. So this is actually the newest book of his that I read, and this is called Revival. This came out in 2014. I think prior to this, the newest one of his that I had read was Dr. Sleep, which came out the year before this, 2013. And I actually watched that, or I actually read that like before the movie came out, so I could compare the two things. I think prior to that, like the newest stuff I had read was, I think I read 11/22/63. I read Duma Key. I read, what was that other one? Under the Dome. I think that was 2009. So, you know, I know he's written like a shit ton of new stuff. And I haven't really like kept up with it, but you know, that's not to say, yes, I do prefer his older stuff, but this one, it's kind of interesting how I came across this because I hadn't really been following when one of his new books comes out, like, you know, I'll go get it from the library or I'll read it or whatever, but it's like, it's not kind of like, oh, I got to go get it right now. Cause there's like a zillion books in my TBR by tons of other authors. And you know, so I don't keep up with his new stuff coming out as much as I used to. So I was actually in a secondhand bookstore, the same place that I got the last novel that I reviewed, which was Others by James Herbert. And I just saw this one like sitting on top of a bookshelf and it's like brand new, like hardback and everything like that. And I was just kind of like, oh man, it's like Stephen King and I hadn't even heard of it. So I was like, oh, okay, 2014. And I thought, what the hell, I'm gonna buy it. I didn't even read what it was about or anything like that because I said, you know, it's fucking Stephen King, right? It's like, it's at least gonna be worth reading. So I picked it up and decided I was gonna sit down and read it. And I gotta say, this book was pretty fucking good. You know what I mean? Like I said, I went into it not knowing at all what to expect. As I said, I have read some of his more recent stuff, but not a lot. And I will say that Dr. Sleep, again, which was, you know, prior to this, the most recent one of his that I read, I liked it, but I didn't love it. And the movie was good too and everything, but it's like, I didn't love the novel. This one, I think I kind of loved it. Because the thing about this one, the thing that's great about this book is that it's kind of like the best possible meeting of his more newer, I want to call it like his more like psychological stuff, more like 11/22/63 was, where it was just kind of like this, where he's talking more about life in general, just like the way, you know, because he's getting older now and, you know, since his accident and everything like that, he's been writing a lot about the 60s and things like that. So this has that aspect to it, but then it also has like the horror shit. It also has elements of Frankenstein in there. It has like a lot of elements of Lovecraft in there, like particularly toward the end. And I wasn't really expecting, and I really liked the way it went. Also has some kind of Ray Bradbury, like Something Wicked This Way Comes type of vibe to it, which was also really cool. And I liked at the beginning, it's almost kind of like an homage to all of the horror that he read growing up. And it's also kind of like a really heartfelt meditation on aging, loss of faith, you know, what's going on in the afterlife, you know, how grief can warp people's perceptions, you know, forbidden knowledge, that kind of stuff. So I really, really, really got into it. So the story of this one, like I said, I don't know if I'm going to like spoil it outright, but you know, it came out several years ago. And as with anything, I never say I'm going to spoil it because I don't really script these, obviously. So I don't like know if I'm going to or not. It just depends when I get there. But so I'm always just kind of like at the beginning, you know me, if you want to read it without having any preconceptions or even any idea what it's about, because that's how I went into it. I just said, oh, it's Stephen King. This is one I hadn't heard of. It came out in 2014. So I just picked it up and read it without knowing at all where it was going to go. And I kind of liked that about it because through the whole thing, I just really had no idea what direction this was going to take. So I may spoil some shit for you. Like I said, if you haven't read it or if you just want to go into it blind, as always, you know, might want to turn this off and come back later, you know, and we can kind of talk about it then. Please excuse my voice is a little froggy. I have like a bit of a sore throat for whatever reason that I woke up with, but I'm going to try and push through it. So this book, it basically follows almost the entire life of our main protagonist, whose name is Jamie Morton. And it's all from his point of view, so this is all in the first person. So Jamie Morton, we start out in the 60s when he is a little kid and he's 6 years old. And basically the book like follows him throughout his life until he's like in his early 60s when he's telling this story, like telling about this stuff that happened. So when he's a little kid, he's living in his little town in Harlow, Maine. And the town gets a new Methodist minister or pastor or whatever it is that they call them, named Pastor Jacobs. Charles Jacobs is the guy's name. So he's very young, kind of like a hip guy. And he's like really, really nice and everybody loves him. And he takes particular interest in Jamie, not in a creepy way or anything, because that's kind of how I thought this was going to go. Because I was like, normally nowadays you read a story where like a pastor is like, hey, little boy, let's do, and you know, it's going to go in one direction, but it doesn't go in that direction at all. So I thought that was kind of interesting because he's like playing with the expectations there. But yeah, so this guy is just like a totally nice guy. He moves to this little town with his family. He has this beautiful wife and this cute little son that everybody's, you know, just thinks is adorable and, you know, carry him around everywhere. And everything is super happy. Now, the pastor is also real into electricity, like it's his hobby. So he builds his own shit. Like he builds his own batteries. Like he's like, hey, I can build, you know, air conditioners. He can build things. And, you know, so that's kind of like his hobby. He has like a little shed where he works on things. And he also does little things for the church. Like he has this little Jesus that he has like a little battery in it that he built that kind of like looks like it walks across water. Like it's going like on this little track or whatever. So right away, we're hinting at one of the themes of the book, which is almost kind of like religion as sham, I guess, because there's a lot of carny kind of stuff that happens later. And he's kind of drawing a parallel between all of these miracles and stuff that, you know, from a religious context and kind of carny tricks or magic tricks. So he's kind of drawing a lot of that as well, which, like I said, that kind of gave me a Something Wicked This Way Comes vibe. So electricity is like a big theme in this book, which is why there's like a lightning bolt on the front, which totally makes sense. Also, I will say right here that I love the title Revival is like the perfect title for this book because it has, over the course of the story, it has multiple meanings. At some point, it does refer to like a literal like tent revival, like a religious type of thing, but it also refers to revival from the dead. It also refers to revival from you've hit rock bottom in your life and you're like you've been brought back up. So it's just kind of like there's all this multiple meaning that the title has, and I just think it's a brilliant title. So basically what happens, so this kind of all goes on and he makes friends with Pastor Jacobs. Like I said, he's very, very popular in the town. Everybody loves him. And then there's just a terrible, horrible, like random car accident in which his wife and son are horribly, horribly killed. After this point, the pastor begins to lose his faith. Well, he doesn't begin to lose his faith. He pretty much loses his faith to a point where he doesn't really, he just thinks there's really no purpose for anything anymore, or it's almost kind of thing. He's like, if there's a God up there, he's just mocking us with this random shit. It's like, you know, it's my wife and kid never did anything to anybody. I never did anything to anybody. You know, so he's almost like it's more than him being like, quote unquote, angry at God. But he basically is just like, there's no meaning, then nothing means anything. So he has like a really bad, like, you know, period of grief, obviously, as you would. And then he gives a sermon one Sunday, which in town lore becomes known as the terrible sermon, because basically he comes on there and he says all of these things. He's just like, you know, what if nothing means anything? And he just has this big and everybody gets like really offended and like starts walking out and stuff. Cause it's like a very religious, you know, like a Methodist community, and they don't like all the shit that he's saying. And like I said, this part is in the 60s as well. So people were, you know, a lot more religious then, I guess. So they were, you know, so everyone gets offended and walks out. He ends up getting fired and leaves town. Now, a lot of the other townsfolk don't want to talk to him after that, but Jamie still, you know, suspects that he might be right, even though he's a little kid. So he still, you know, wants to kind of give the olive branch of friendship or whatever. And the pastor seemed to appreciate that. And then he sort of like, you know, goes off into the winds or whatever. So then we skip ahead several years. We kind of talk about Jamie's teenage years, how he discovered his talent for music, how he started getting into bands, and how that started to happen. So we kind of follow that. And then he starts taking, he eventually ends up as a heroin addict. You know, he's playing as a session musician. Like I said, he's in several bands. He's making a living at it and he's touring with all these other bands, but it's getting to a point where his addiction is making him so unreliable that he keeps getting fired. So when we jump ahead to, I can't remember what year it was. I think it's sometime in the 70s. And he has pretty much hit rock bottom. Like I said, he wakes up in this Fleabag hotel, you know, and he's peed his bed and he's, you know, having like fucking, he wants to go and score and this band has fired him and they've left him at this motel because that's where they were staying. And so he decides he's going to go to this nearby state fair, carnival type of thing, and he's going to get some drugs. Now, while he's there, he happens to come across his old buddy, Pastor Jacobs, who is not a pastor anymore, but he's working a carne shy, as they call it, and it's called Portraits in Lightning. And he does this amazing thing where he takes a picture, like he has this old-fashioned looking camera, and he has somebody come up from the crowd or whatever and takes a picture of them with this crazy camera and makes all this lightning. And then it sort of like, it's kind of hard to describe, but it takes the person and it puts them on this really big screen, except it changes the color of their hair and it makes them look all glamorous and shit like that. And then he takes a picture of it like on a glass plate and then you can keep the picture, right? And nobody can figure out how he can do it. So it's almost kind of like this weird Tesla situation, because apparently he's been experimenting this whole time that him and Jamie have been separated, and has come up with some pretty crazy shit. But he's like, you know, earning money like on the carny circuit doing these crazy portraits. Now, while this is going on, like I said, Jamie is kind of jonesing for heroin and he ends up passing out. And Pastor Jacobs, who is not a pastor anymore, like I said, so we'll just call him Charlie because that's what Jamie calls him. And he basically rescues him and he takes him back to his trailer. And he says that, you know, in all the experiments I've been doing with this electricity, which he calls his secret electricity, I can heal you of your addiction. Now, this is a callback because back in the 60s, they know that he's not entirely full of shit because he used this electric gadget that he had invented. And he called it like a nerve stimulator or something like that to cure Jamie's brother, Conrad, who had lost his voice after getting like hit in the neck with a ski pole or something like that. So, you know, so Pastor Jacobs tried to write it off at the time. He's just like, oh, you know, his loss of voice was just psychosomatic. I just like made him believe, you know. So like I said, it's very much the theme of this is just kind of like faith in magic, making things happen, you know, placebos and things like that. But Jamie suspects that he really did heal him. So now when he meets him and he has like the heroin addiction and, you know, Pastor Jacob says, you know, I will heal you of your heroin addiction using, you know, my updated experiment that I've been working on with electricity. And so since he has that experience of him healing his brother back in the 60s, he agrees to do it, although he is reluctant because he's not sure it's entirely safe and he's not sure, you know what I mean. So Charlie is basically like, well, if I do this, you know, you come with me and be my assistant for a while, but he's like, you can't hang out because I'm kind of a loner. I don't really want all of this because he's still like kind of a broken man because of the horrible shit that happened to him back in the 60s. He's never gotten over the death of his family. So he's kind of like just drifting from place to place. Jamie agrees. They do the lightning thing and it does immediately heal his heroin addiction. Like he tries to even give him the bottle and he's just like, nah, I'm good. Like I don't need it anymore. And so it's like a miracle, right? But then Jamie starts to have a couple of like weird side effects. Let's call them that. Nothing too alarming really, but he will kind of like do shit like sleepwalk. Like he'll wake up in the middle of the night and he'll be like standing in the corner of the room, like stabbing his arm with a fork or something like that. And it's like a little bit alarming, But Charlie makes the point. He's like, yeah, but that'll probably fade after a time. He's like, I've been doing these lightning portraits, which is a similar kind of thing. And, you know, it wears off after a little while, so you'll be fine. And he's like, it's just think of it like, you know, a side effect after taking, you know, like a antibiotic or getting a vaccine or something like that. It's like, you know, it'll fade. It's fine. And it's like way better than having a heroin addiction. Right. Right. At this point, like I said, so the after effects are a little upsetting, but nothing too, you know, earth shattering. So Jamie's like, okay, fine. That's fine. So then they separate once again, because as I said, Charlie's kind of like, you know, I work alone and I'm gonna go on my way now. But what he does do is he sets Jamie up with a dude he knows named Hugh in Colorado who owns a music studio. And he's like, go there, tell him that I sent you and he will give you a job. You know, with the implication being that he had healed that guy of something too, which they do actually discuss later on. So he owed him a favor. So Jamie actually cleans up his act. He goes out to Colorado. He starts working at this music studio. He works up his way up to manager. He's like a session musician and he works with like famous people. So his life is like looking pretty good. As it goes on though, like him and Hugh, like several years go by. Like I said, everything's doing good. He has a job. And then they discover that, you know, all these years later after he's been cured, the pastor is back again. Now he's going by Pastor Danny, I think. And he's doing like a tent revival. They find out about it because they see it on the internet and they're like, what the fuck? It's like, oh, he's back to those old tricks again. Now he's healing people, you know, at these big tent revival meetings. So they're like, we should probably go check this out. And so they decide to do that because it turns out that Hugh, who was also healed of something, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was also healed of something by the pastor, and that's why he owed him a favor. But he has weird after effects too, but his are different. He says that he calls them like prismatics, and he's like, I see all these like weird fucking colors. And at this point, when he said that in the book, I was like, this is gonna go in a Lovecraft direction, because it reminded me very much of, remember when I did the review on that movie, X, the man with the X-ray eyes? And I said that guy was like, you know, he could see past everything. And when he was going more and more and he was like, his vision was getting better and better. And he kept seeing like all these shifting colors. And you were meant to surmise that he was seeing like beyond the bonds of like the universe, like parting the veil and like seeing like other dimensions and shit. And what was behind everything. That's essentially what I suspect, and that's kind of the direction it goes in. Like I said, it's a very Lovecraftian existential type of scary shit, like what's like we're piercing the veil of what's behind everything, like what's behind like the secrets of the universe and all that kind of stuff. So it does go in that direction. So yeah, so he had started seeing all these shifting colors, but he's like, it's nothing too bad, but he's like, and I haven't had it for a long time. But they go to the tent revival and the dude seems to be healing people, even though some of the shit, Jamie's just like, I don't know, some of this looks like bullshit, like fake, you know, sometimes, oh, I'm taking the tumor out. And he's like, that's obviously like a chicken liver or some shit like that. But some of the stuff seems kind of legit. Now, at the tent revival, Hugh has another one of his prismatics things, and it's like really, really bad. And he's like, not only did I see that, but I also saw this really horrible vision of like people were like big ants, and it was just kind of thing. And then Jamie had like nightmares previously about all his dead family members and like with ants crawling out of like a cake or something. And so he's kind of like, okay, well, we need to look further into this. So what Jamie decides to do is that he becomes kind of obsessed with looking into Charlie / Pastor Danny's past and being like, all these people that he healed, you know, did they have the same like after effects like I had? Does it really work? What the fuck is going on? Because he's starting to think that maybe there's something sinister. So he enlists this girl who's like the daughter of someone that works with him. And they're also kind of have like a little romantic thing too, but it's not like a big thing. And so she helps him look up all of these people that the pastor supposedly healed. Now, a lot of them seemed like they were really healed, and a lot of them seemed like they were okay, but there was a not insignificant percentage of them that had some really unfortunate after effects from the healing, including, you know, eating dirt. One person just went mentally, you know, they just went essentially mentally comatose. They just kind of like stood there and looked at a wall. So there was enough there that they said, okay, we need to find this dude now and stop him from doing what he's doing because he's hurting people. So that's essentially the final third of the book, is basically Jamie trying to find the dude because he's kind of going into hiding. Like, he did the pastor thing. He made like a shit ton of money, like millions and millions of dollars. So he can like move around at will and like keep things secret. And he's still working on his electricity. And the point is that he's basically trying to, as I said, pierce the veil of death. He wants to see what's beyond it, if there's anything beyond it. And it all stems from that long ago time when his family was killed just in this random, stupid accident that was nobody's fault, and him losing his faith in God, and then also wanting to maybe even see if he could see them again, or see what was, you know, see if they were still there, if they could be accessed, and see if God was real, basically. So it's just kind of like I said, a very Dr. Frankenstein, mad scientist type of guy. And I liked his character because even though he's ostensibly the villain, like the antagonist, he doesn't start out that way. He actually starts out as a lovely person, but as life goes on and just kind of kicks the shit out of him, he becomes more and more crazy and more obsessed with finding out the secrets of the universe, basically. So his journey and Jamie's are almost kind of like parallel, and it's almost kind of like at the very beginning of the book, and I think even on the back blurb, it has like kind of an excerpt where Jamie calls the pastor his fifth business, meaning this person that he met when he was a kid, and it just like the agent of change, like of his entire life. And it's almost kind of like these two characters are linked over the years because he keeps running into the dude, or, you know, like their fates are linked because they met when they were kids, and it was some kind of, you know, some kind of like connection that was made there that can't be broken. So over the last third of the book, Jamie is sort of forced to work with Pastor Danny, or Charlie, whatever you want to call him, because he goes by different names over the course of the book, in his sort of final experiment to pierce the veil. Like I said, he sort of gets blackmailed into it. He's not super happy about it. And that's how the final third of the book goes. This book, it's really interesting because the first probably two-thirds of it, I don't know if I wouldn't call it a horror, because it's definitely a horror novel. But it's not like a lot of the first two-thirds of it is basically just like going through someone's life and all of their kind of trials and tribulations. You know, everybody that can relate to, you know, having like a drug addiction or getting older, or like having your, you know, having family members die, things like that. So it's just kind of like there's a lot of that. And then with just these kind of hints on the outset that shit is not what it seems like, and, you know, maybe the afterlife isn't what you think it is, or maybe, so it's, like I said, it's a very existential dread type of thing. But also, I think the character of Jamie, who the whole entire book is told from his perspective, like it's in the first person, he's such a great character that it's very, very easy to just go along for the ride of him talking about his life and talking about all these tragic things. So it's almost kind of like, it's pretty dark in some ways, but it's not dark in a way. I mean, it's just shit that happens to like regular people. It's like basically shit happens, the book, you know what I mean? Like the first two thirds. And it's not until the final third that it goes full on like supernatural Frankenstein, Lovecraft type of shit, where he's getting like all these horrific visions of like what could possibly be beyond the boundaries of the universe or whatever. So it's that. So I think it's a good balance between those two things, because like I said, for a while, I wasn't really sure which way it was going to go. I knew it was going to go, like once he started talking about the colors and the lights and everything, I was like, oh, like Man with X-ray Eyes. So I figured it was going to go like in a Lovecraftian direction, which it did, but I wasn't entirely sure how that was going to manifest itself. So I really, really liked how it sort of played out. Now, I did feel like the end was a little bit abrupt, but that's like a very, very minor criticism. On the whole, I love this book. I just thought it was such an easy read. Like I said, his character is just so likable, and he's so compelling, and he's so real that you know, it's very easy to just follow him along this journey, even when they're doing like just regular teenage shit, or he's just talking about playing in his band and, you know, getting addicted to heroin, how you score and all this other kind of stuff. So it's just kind of, you know, and Stephen King is writing obviously from a lot of his own life, because he had a lot of addictions, as everyone knows. And he's also in a rock band. I think they still play, Rock Bottom Remainders. It's him and a bunch of other authors, and they just kind of get together and play some gigs and stuff. So he's kind of writing about what he knows, and writing about just life in general and how life can kick the shit out of you. So I think that all of that kind of comes through and makes this just like a really genuine read. And it's a total page turner too, because like I said, you're not entirely sure where it's going. So, I mean, the whole time, I mean, this book, it's short for Stephen King. It's only like 400 pages. It's only 400 pages. Stephen King's books are usually these big doorstops. But, so I read it in like, maybe like a day and a half, maybe like and you know, that's not an entire day, but just like a few hours here, a few hours there, because I wanted to see what was going to happen. You know what I mean? So it's like a real page turner. But yeah, so if you haven't read any of Stephen King's newer stuff, because I know there's a thing like with horror fans, and it's just kind of like, oh, his newer stuff isn't as good and blah, 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 which I guess to a large degree, I'd agree with that, but I haven't read, you know, I've just read like a smattering of his newer things, and I didn't like some of them as much as I liked his older stuff. But this one, I think, was definitely a winner. This one is definitely maybe like, I don't know if I'd call it like a return to form, but it's definitely one of, I think it's probably the best of the new ones of his that I've read. It was the most compelling. It had the most interesting story. I really liked the homage to like old Mad Scientist stuff, like old, like Carney kind of stuff. I like all the rock and roll stuff. And it's like pretty much like all of the cool shit that he's into, like in all of the authors that he loves, he's kind of put all that in there. So it's almost kind of like a love letter to all of that. And I thought that was like, but also being its own thing, you know what I mean? So I really, really liked that. But yeah, it's like definitely, I'm really glad I picked this up, because like I said, this was a Stephen King book and I just saw it in the bookstore and I was just kind of like, oh, hey, haven't heard of that one. Maybe I should read it. So I picked it up and read it. And yeah, it's like really, really good. I really, really liked it a lot. And it does seem like, so I've read some other reviews of it and a lot of people also really seem to dig it. So you might also. So, you know, there it is. It's Revival by Stephen King. Came out in 2014. So if you haven't read it, go and check it out. I highly recommend it. And I will see you guys on the next Tomes of Terror. Bye.